Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The home team.
And here we go.
All right, kicking off hour number two, we are the home team, presented by Golden Pantry. Eat, drink, be golden. Chris Brame and Jeff Dantzler with you till 7. Then we'll have the Braves and Nationals coming up tonight. The Braves 6-3. They've won all three of their series so far this year. They'll roll into D.C. where the Nats just got swept by the Mets, who so far this year have been amazing. They've only lost one game. So Atlanta and Washington coming up tonight at 7 o'clock, just as soon as we are finished with you here.
I have one question. Did the Braves get to travel Matthew Kaminsky up there?
They should.
Because he's become quite famous playing off of Bryce Harper.
He plays the umpire thing.
Right.
When Harper comes to bat. Now, Harper's already hit 6 home runs this year, so it doesn't seem to be bothering him.
He's having a pretty good year. And this is his free agent year, right? So, or is it still maybe next year?
It's coming. It's approaching. This might be it.
Yeah. So I think it might be a deal where they're either going to re-sign him or you don't want to do the deal where – you play out the last year. But I've seen all this talk like $400 million, which let me just go ahead and tell you, he's not worth that. He might be the best player, but just ask the Angels with Albert Pujols.
Who Somebody's going to pay. Player? Now the Angels have Ohtani.
Who is the best player
he's
right
really
now?
He's really good.
I mean, when he's tossing, he got a CG win, a shutout, and set down the first 19 he faced and hit 3 homers in between. Last guy to do that was the Bambino.
Well, one of those home runs, too, was last week they were losing 2-0 to Cleveland, and Kluber was pitching for the Indians, and, he was just mowing them down, looking like a Cy Young Award winner, and then Ohtani came in and hit the 2-run homer and tied the game.
I understand that's a rare talent to do that. Now, in college, occasionally you'll have guys. John Olerud won the Pac-12 Triple Crown for both hitting and pitching in the same season.
Right.
Tim Hudson hit 3.
I played with a dude that wore a batting helmet.
That was me. Tim Hudson hit 395 and had, I think, 17 home runs and was like 14-1 on the mound. Derek Lilliquist here struck out 190 on the mound, went 14-3 and hit 18 home runs. So there have been guys who have done it. But in the majors, in the pros, they don't even seem to give them a chance to try and do that. But if you could get a guy, to me it's kind of like when you get that great run-pass quarterback, and just look at what Cam did at Auburn in 2010, that you basically get a great tailback and quarterback rolled into one. So if you can get a guy who is a rare talent like this, so what the Angels, they've got an ace on the pitching staff, and they've got a middle of the lineup all-star caliber hitter as well, and one guy.
Yeah. Well, did they just talk about it or actually do it? Did the Giants use Bumgarner as a DH?
I think they did for a game.
Or they have used him as a pinch hitter before.
Yes.
I know they've done that. But I want to say they played in one of their AL games, they might have DH'd him or something.
Yeah,
he
I
can
think
rake.
So. Yeah, he can hit.
But, this guy he's a sensation so far. Still early on in the year.
And who was it you said? One of the ESPN guys. Oh, they got to start him in AAA.
Yeah, I was listening to – it was that Bill Plaschke. It was, I guess, week before last, right before opening day.
Right.
And he was on with Stephen A. Smith, and Stephen A. Smith started to ask him a question about it. He went, let me stop you. You're going to ask me about Ohtani. Yeah, he needs to be in AAA. I watched him all spring.
Well, you think he'd be pretty good in the minors?
Yeah,
he's
he's not ready. They're doing him a disservice, or he's only getting a spot on the roster because it's
the media
frenzy. It's a big deal. It is a big deal. They signed him for all this dough and everything, but he should be in AAA. And that moment, I went,
he'll be pretty good.
This guy's probably going to end up being pretty good. And so far, yeah, like you said, he's got 3 home runs and he almost threw a no hitter.
Well, to Bill Plaschke's point, he probably would have been pretty good for the Albuquerque Dukes as well.
Yeah. You know who they should be in AAA right now is Giancarlo Stanton. I think he struck out 20 times last week.
He's got that big swing. It's too long.
Some have pointed out that there was that year DiMaggio struck out 13 times.
He's already beaten that. Yeah.
Last week.
Yeah. He's already beaten that. I think DiMaggio, in fact, for his career, I might be one or two off. I believe it was 361 homers, 369 strikeouts, which is far and away the best ratio.
Right.
Yeah.
Although Stanton will probably say, considering I struck out five times in one game, 20 in 1 week's not that bad.
It's not that bad.
Right.
Hey, we were talking about this. Dave and I, Tech had a guy who got the golden sombrero with four Ks. And I'm thinking, because remember Matt Cerrone, who was a terrific player for us out in Omaha, he had an 0 for 5 with five Ks. Then the next game, he delivers a game-winning hit. But if you're going through a game like that, let's say you're 0 for 3 with three Ks. Although, Brame, you're a 5-2 or 5 star. That would have never happened. But just for the sake of argument.
No.
You've got Harford's haircut.
I'd have bunted.
Bunt is an option.
Yeah.
Or if, let's say, but you're a 5 star.
Right.
You're a 5-2 or 5 star. Yeah, coach ain't bunting you. All right.
Some of these college coaches, I don't know, they get wacky sometimes.
You pop one, foul territory. Is it go? You know, there's not much room at Foley Field in foul territory. Is that going to go in the third base dugout or off the net, or maybe the guy catches it? Is there a part of you hoping that third baseman for South Carolina
then
makes
it.
The catch?
Yes.
That way you're at least off the case.
Because I'm not feeling good. Obviously, I had a big night the
you
night
were
before.
You out in Athens last night.
Yeah, so now I'm striking out a lot. I'll never, you know, the guy I'll never forget is that Zeph Zinsman.
1 for 14 here in Athens.
With, I believe,
it was 13
strikeouts. Yes. And I just, because he was a guy, I remember he had like some hairdo.
Oh, it was like purple and green.
And he would like, he would not wear his helmet or a hat on the field until he was actually hitting. He wanted everyone to see it. He'd get out there. And he was like.
He transferred from Washington. It was like this big sensation.
Yeah.
But he was horrible. He was either 0 for 14 or 1 for 14, but he had between 11 and 13 strikeouts.
They were all strikeouts.
He was hitting. And then the story was after that, he had a good time in Athens.
Right. Well, he had that haircut.
He had that haircut, and he had met up with.
In fact, I you say Washington. I think he was like some California kid.
He might have been. I think he was from California. But I swear, I think he might have played at Washington and transferred in.
Yeah.
But no, he had the hair, and he had colored it like lime green and purple.
Yeah. And it was all like spiky and stuff.
Oh, I mean, he was a dude.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But he struck out a lot. That was an 0-1.
He got the Athens flu.
Yeah, he did.
Because that was an unbelievable series. We played 3 one-run games, and I believe all went to 10 innings.
He might have been the difference with all those strikeouts, because they hit him. He was like their cleanup hitter.
Oh, he was a great
like fourth
player.
Fourth or fifth. He was right in the middle of their lineup.
No, he was a great player.
Yeah.
Not that weekend.
Zeph Zinsman, legend. All right, 5 at 5 time brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. Jeff, let's start with Jonas Hayes. He's leaving Athens, and he will not remain with Georgia and stay on Tom Crean's staff. He instead is heading to Xavier. Jeff, who are we? Are we mad at Tom Crean? Are we mad at Jonas that he's abandoning us? What is what are your thoughts on this?
First of all, for me, I'm heartbroken that he's leaving, because he is such a great guy, and he and Jarvis, that family, have just meant so much to the program, and they're both such good friends. I'm just guessing. I'm not speaking for Jonas here, I promise. If his thought process, and I know this, he wants to be the head basketball coach at Georgia one day. His thought process probably is for that, the odds of that to best happen would best be served by going somewhere else and then hopefully coming back. Hey, listen, I hope Tom Crean's here for several years and we go to Final Fours, and when he retires or if he takes another job, whatever it may be, that Jonas comes on and he's the next guy. So I just think he felt the odds were probably better if he went somewhere else. And, you know, he might have even looked at Kirby's trajectory. Because I can listen, I was mad when Kirby left after 1 year in 2005. You know, we won the SEC. He gets us Knowshon. He went to go be with Nick Saban. And I was mad when he didn't come here when we hired Grantham in 2010. But, you know, it was a smart move for him, because ultimately he wanted to be the head coach here. And had he come here in 2010, Could we have maybe won a national title or two with Coach Richt? Maybe. But the odds of that coach in waiting thing happening or
well, our recruiting
working
might
out,
have been better during that period of time. Than
it would
was.
Have been for sure. So. But again, then do you, you know, then is Coach Richt still here? Does Kirby get antsy and go somewhere else? So it worked out fine. So Jonas wants to be the head coach here one day. He loves the Georgia Bulldogs. He loves Athens. So I just think for him, he probably just felt this was the best move for him to get that position someday.
Well, if I'm leaving one out, tell me, but there are really only three potential outcomes for Tom Crean here. One of them is that he is successful. He's in his early 50s and coaches here for 10, 15 years and then just retires.
Retires, right.
The other is obviously you get fired.
You get fired.
Or he's successful here and all of a sudden this is a guy that's coached at Marquette in Indiana. And so some
UCLA
of these other
– UCLA calls. Some of these this other, guy took Georgia to a Final Four.
Right. Some of these other big schools decide to get interested in him and he leaves. So – from Jonas's standpoint, leaving here probably is the best option because if Crean got fired, if it just didn't work out and he got fired, then all of a sudden Jonas has been on two staffs that got fired.
Right.
Part B is he's just sitting here for 10 or 15 years. He wants to be a head coach. Mm-hmm. He's going to go be a head coach somewhere anyway if Crean is successful and stays here for a long time. And I guess, you know, the third one is Crean could leave and Jonas could just be elevated, but he could just as easily come back if he's someplace else.
Right.
At a place like Xavier. And let's also, I mean, be brutally honest, Xavier was just a one seed in the NCAA tournament. That is a better job than Georgia.
Georgia's job has more potential, no question, but Xavier is a better job. And I can remember, I guess it was when Coach Fox got hired here, I think it was Sean Miller, was it Xavier then? And they were saying, well, maybe we could get Sean Miller. And I said, I don't mean to spoil anybody's parade, but what Xavier, what have they been to, something like 22 out of 24 tournaments or something. They got this run going. And also, we happened to play up there in women's hoops, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago. And they had just built – they've got this unbelievable arena up there that seats like 13, 14,000 people. And this is way before we had updated the Coliseum. And it was one of those things kind of in private conversations. I was like, look, I'm just telling you. They got a better arena. They're the big deal on campus there. It's like he's not leaving Xavier to come here.
One thing Xavier's doing is closing in on BYU, though, for the most tournament appearances
right.
without a Final Four. They're one back now. It's 29 for BYU and 28 for Xavier. But, yeah, because it was, let's see, Thad Matta was there.
Yes.
Then Miller. I mean, there was also.
Well, did his brother take over or was Archie somewhere else?
Archie was at Dayton.
Dayton, okay.
But even before that, that Pete Gillum who went to Virginia was there.
Yeah. No, they've got an unbelievable treat.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what Tulsa had. What they went from Nolan Richardson, had Steve. Was the guy's name Steve Richardson too? The guy who was at Florida State?
I don't remember him.
You know who? Steve Robinson.
That's it.
So they had Nolan. They had Steve Robinson, they had Tubby, and they had Bill Self.
Yeah. Also, Skip Prosser coached at Xavier.
Great coach.
But then, and now, most recently, Chris Mack hired by Louisville, and so now they've got their, what's his name, Travis Steele is who Jonas is going to go work for.
So Jonas is going to be back here one day. It breaks my heart that he's leaving right now because I love the guy, I love the family. But I can tell you, he loves the Georgia Bulldogs. And him doing this is, I guarantee you, what he feels the best way for him to get back here is Georgia's head coach one day.
Who knows what the time frame is? He Georgia's next basketball coach after Tom Crean?
Yes.
Yeah. Will he be a head coach somewhere in between?
I would say there's a good chance.
Yeah,
and again, it just depends. Listen, I hope Coach Crean's here. You know, here's the thing now. For like how long Coach Durham was here, Coach Dooley was here. It's, I mean, 9-10 years is like the new 20.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Fox is just here nine years. Yeah.
So, if I say now, well, I hope Coach Crean's here for a decade and does great, you know, 25 years ago, I'd have said, oh, I hope he's here 20, 25 years. But that's just not the way it works these days. So hopefully, you know, he's here for a decade and we go to some Final Fours and Jonas kind of follows that trajectory at Xavier. Maybe he becomes their head coach or maybe he gets a very good mid-major job and can win there, or, you know, maybe comes back as the coach in waiting or something like that. But I will say that he wants this job so bad. He wants to be the head coach here, and he probably just feels that this was the best way for him to get it. And I will say, I did text him today, and I told him, I said, I'm going to miss you. I understand. Best of luck to you, my friend. And he said it was very emotional. It was a very difficult thing for him to do. But sometimes in this business, you got to make hard decisions, and you got to step away to get back.
But, you know, the way this happened, too, because we talked about it last week, the odd situation that Tom Crean was in as a new coach, where he shows up and it's almost like, well, I need to keep this assistant coach because everybody loves him. And, you know, I guess he did, you know, supposedly make him some kind of an offer. But like you said, in the end, Jonas has made the tough decision and decided that one day to be a head coach here, maybe his best option was to go someplace else. And I mean, Xavier's a great basketball program too. So,
Let's put it this way too. Let's use Kirby again for an example. I mean, do you not think in 2010 that he and Mary Beth wanted to come home? We were going to pay him more money, and would you rather work for Mark Richt or Nick Saban? I mean, it was all sitting there for him. But I think he realized that ultimately he wanted, his dream was to be the head coach at Georgia. So the best odds for that were for him to stay at Alabama at that point.
Well, I remember too. I remember Saban saying something like, "I mean, it was almost like, no, I'm not going to allow one of my assistants to leave to be for the same job lateral at another school." Basically,
you're not going to allow that. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like that's what it was like. And
are you going to put up a roadblock?
Yeah, no, you're going to come to my office and I'm going to chain
shut
you
that
in there.
Door.
Yeah, you'll
hit that button.
You'll come out on Saturdays and coach. Jeff, moving on in the 5 at 5, Patrick Reed won the Masters. Now, you don't like him, and he does have a history at Georgia. Can you explain the complicated backstory between Patrick Reed and the University of Georgia?
I think it's pretty – I'm sure most fans could Google it up and find out, but it was not a good parting of the ways here, and the folks around the program haven't been terribly fond of him, and it seems like, and from what you read, very similar things happen at Augusta State. And then for just the awful karma of it all, for him to wind up at Augusta, we're playing them for the national championship in 2011, and he wins a deciding match against Harris English. It was Trey Matthews before Trey Matthews was Trey Matthews.
Or it was kind of, and he didn't come here, but it was sort of a Scam Newton story too, I guess.
No question.
Yeah.
It was, you know, so you understand, and he's kind of worn that black sheep hat. I hate it for him, like his relationship with his parents. I think that is just horribly sad. And again, I don't wish any ill will on the guy, but with what went down here, the fact that he winds up down the road, they wind up winning the national title. He wins a deciding match against Harris English. He's a great guy. You know, just listen, Georgia fans, myself included, not happy that he won the Masters. I don't feel like we need to apologize for that either.
No.
It's like you said.
You should be able to, yeah, dislike golfers the same way you dislike football players or baseball players.
Right.
Or yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So,
like you said, people in New York hate Tom Brady.
I hated Wade Boggs, and then he wound up playing for the Yankees.
And you did? Did you hate him then?
That was the first.
What about
point.
Johnny Damon?
That was the first. I always liked Damon at Boston.
Okay,
I thought he was a little Punch and Judy, but then that was when I kind of got the Seinfeld. You're not rooting for players; you're rooting for laundry. Because I'm like, God, I just hated this guy. Plus, yeah, I loved Don Mattingly. They were the two best lefty hitters. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, here's this guy I was just rooting against all these years, and he's riding a horse around Yankee Stadium after winning the World Series. It just didn't.
It didn't feel right.
It didn't feel right at all. But that is, you know, and I guess the thing with golf, that standard was kind of set in that Palmer and Player and Nicklaus and Watson, those guys all competed against each other, but were very close friends. Watson and Player not so much, but all the rest of the guys, they were all very close, and you rooted for all those guys. That's kind of a utopian situation, and that is. Not that, like, you could tell McIlroy and Reed don't like each other. That's pretty easy.
No,
to
that
see.
Goes back from when they were playing the repair to the Ryder Cup and kept shushing each other.
But no, it was only the second worst day that ends in the eighth of a month in the year 2018 here in 2018.
But it was that bad for you. So which brings me, is he now your least favorite Masters champion of all time?
Yes.
Ahead of, I mean, a tech man has won the Masters, right?
Yeah, so is a Gator, Tommy Aaron.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
Tommy Aaron, he lives around here though. Right?
He's from Gainesville.
Yeah.
He was also the player with DeVincenzo with the incorrect scorecard when Bob Golby won in 68.
Oh.
Aaron was his playing partner.
So he's the one that messed up his scorecard?
He wrote it down for a 4 instead of a 3. And DeVincenzo just didn't catch it. It was an honest mistake.
That's that Gator math.
But so there should have been a playoff and there wasn't. But here's where Augusta gets it. There was a good piece on it before the Masters. I guess it was Sunday. And they even went to Bobby Jones, and he said, you know what you got to do. And they informed DeVincenzo, technically he should have been disqualified, but they still let him finish second and, like, get that prize money. Like, the U.S. Open would have just DQ'd him.
Yeah.
But this was like, look, it's an honest mistake. It was the other guy's scorecard. He missed it. Everybody feels horrible. Bob Golby felt horrible. But they didn't, like, they at least let him get the second place money.
So, I mean, you could be dastardly and just intentionally write a wrong score and make sure.
But then the other guy would have to catch it.
Yeah. So maybe Tommy Aaron did that. I mean, he did go to Florida.
Dastardly Gator.
Yeah. For you this week, who was who would you say was the biggest bust, biggest disappointment? I mean, we talked about it. It was leading up to it with all these players and the form that they were in. And it did. I mean, it held up. It was a great leaderboard yesterday. But who do you think had the most disappointing weekend?
You know, I would probably say Phil Mickelson, because he was having a really good year, and then he just went sideways.
Yeah.
He did make the cut, but
he finished below Tiger.
He did. I thought Phil was really going to be there. And the other thing, I know Dustin Johnson would have liked to have gotten closer, but you know, he was at least under par. And Paul Casey had the great round on Sunday. So I would probably say Phil. What say you?
He was playing in the final group yesterday, but because of that, I got to say it was Rory.
No, it was a golden opportunity for him.
Yeah. I mean, in a day when you had guys go 5-under, 8-under, 3-under.
He shot a 74.
He shot a 74, and the guy he was playing with that was three shots ahead of him shot a 71.
Let me point this out too, Chris, that so that was a three-shot swing the wrong way. That remember 2 years ago when Spieth blew it and Danny Willett won it. By the way, we'll be forgetting his name in about 3 years. But you remember on Saturday, Spieth was leaking oil the last couple of holes. You could tell he was counting holes and was just running out of gas. McIlroy, I believe, I don't think he made a birdie that day. I don't remember what his score was, but it was there for – and he was playing with Spieth, so it was there for him
right.
to go out there and fire a low round. And he didn't, and it was there for him. Yes, obviously everybody else shot a low round, and very early in the round, it was pretty much a match play deal between those two.
Yesterday, if you look at the top, the guys that finished in the top 15, every single one of them was under par except one.
Yeah,
the guy playing in the last group of the day, McIlroy.
And I think for him, maybe mentally, that the hard part is, and here I am giving I can't break 100. Here I am giving advice to guys who won 4 major championships. It does seem with Rory that when the wheels start to come off, maybe it's just not one flat tire. It's like all 4 wheels come off at the same time. And I tell you, when he missed that putt at 2, and then there was that 2-shot swing back the other way at 3, I had a bad feeling that he wasn't gonna overtake him because it seemed like. And I also think mentally, when he didn't make the putt at 3, that would have tied him for the lead. Just psychologically catching
sure.
him at that
and
point.
And it helped Reed, too, at this point where
he still had the lead.
Yeah, where he was staring at 30 minutes into this round, I had a 3-shot lead, and all of a sudden we're tied. With this guy who I don't care for.
And you're playing head-to-head. And then Reed jams in that putt on number 3.
Yeah.
Then Rory missed another ticklish downhill birdie putt.
And it's great. Like, so now this is his 4th straight top 10, and he still finished tied for 5th this week. But there, maybe there's still some scar tissue there from 2011. I mean, he's right there, and he was there this week. He was playing in the final group. But when you look at the scores that were posted yesterday, for him to go out and shoot a 74, I mean, he's kind of the disappointment of the week, just for that one round.
He was really certainly the disappointment of Sunday.
Of Sunday, yeah.
Yeah.
Finally, Jeff, wrap it up the 5-5. The Braves are 6-3. They've won all three of their series so far this year. Jeff, the Braves, are they good?
Well, if they keep Preston Tucker and call this Okuna up, yeah. Then you got him and you got Freeman. Hey, there you go.
I'm still troubled by the fact that their number one starter is Julio Teheran.
Yeah, no, I think they've at least got some spunk. And I do like that. Hey, Preston Tucker was a really good player at Florida, so at least they've got, you know, a good SEC guy there. Who, again, I get why the pro scouts didn't love him. Maybe he didn't project at this position or that, but the guy can hit.
Yeah,
the guy can hit. So could they maybe get to 500? I don't know. Maybe, but I think if you're a diehard Braves fan, they at least give you a reason to watch.
Offensively, they'll have a pulse this year. I just can't trust their starting rotation. No. And so over 162 game season, I don't think a rotation that right now is Teheran, Fultonevich, Newcomb, McCarthy, and then I guess Sanchez is this fifth that they've got for the time being. That's not going to hold up.
I mean, unless two of those guys are dudes and they both have their first great year
dudes
together.
In the making, yeah.
I mean, like, here's the thing that happened in 91. And I remember, I'll tell you what, we got to go to a timeout. Let's talk some more Braves when we come back.
All right, 5-5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system,
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.